Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, March the 13th, 6:30 p.m., 2016. I'm Grant and Taylor Hughes from my show, The Grant and Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Grant?
I'm doing just fine.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it.
But, you know, my sequence, you see the sequence there? I went, what was that about? I had put the time after before the year, right?
Oh, well.
I probably should write it down and read it. What's that?
Probably noticed. Nobody noticed that.
Of course not. I should read it like the politicians read their speeches, right? I should write them down. I used to a long time ago. But at this point, I thought maybe I'd do it correctly. But here we go, editorializing about the introduction, right? Which is that just rude or in terms of completely out of touch with proper procedure, right?
Yes, totally inappropriate.
And a professional point of view, right? They're so unprofessional on that show. Yes, but we have fun, though, don't we? I mean, people say they really like our idle banter back and forth. Because
I think we're naturally comedic
when we deal with each other.
So we are amusing some people, so that's good.
Yes, we're very amusing to people and very entertaining, from what I gather. Which I think is the whole idea, right? We're trying to make a really serious subject, make light of it in a way, because it really is stupid, the whole thing. It's a mess. What?
Excuse me. Therefore,
what?
Sorry, I'm half laughing and half coughing. I said, therefore, we should continue if you think we're amusing people.
Well, I think so. I mean, like I said, we probably shouldn't make light of a serious subject, but then I think it's all stupid anyway. The whole bankruptcy thing is ridiculous, but we can't get out of bankruptcy because we don't have a method to get. We have a method because I've shown the method. To implement it is entirely probably impossible. But again, you're in a dark age when you don't have knowledge. If you don't know something, then you just throw up your hands and give up on the whole thing. I think that's no way to be. What do you think? I mean, don't you think it's important to have a thesis? We had no thesis before 2004 because we really didn't have a fix for the bankruptcy. In other words, there's a paradox here. We have a fix, but we can't implement it. Is that ridiculous or what?
Yeah, well, it's true, but it's still, you know, how many people listen to this show? I mean, in comparison to the entire population of the world, it's probably not even a drop in a bucket. So a lot of people are still not aware of what that solution is.
Well, I understand that. But again, there is a solution. There is a thesis for it that wasn't there before. All right. And I realize that. But the potential, see, if you put something in an archive or it's recording, people can see it and refer to it, so it is a cast in stone, so to speak, to a certain degree. So, in other words, we have declared the fix, but the ridiculous part is the implementation probably is nearly impossible. Because how are we supposed to get the bankers to agree to approximate mathematics, you know, where they can't measure if they're off by a few pennies? In your bank account, they won't allow that. They still will bounce a check, correct?
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, of course, it has to be accurate, or you will be, what's the word when you're in insufficient funds? So even if it's off a nickel, you'll have insufficient funds.
Right, that's the point. But again, the insufficiency is based upon exactitude of measure when it doesn't exist. See, why do they declare, as I've said, and it's known, well known, that there's a 70-year cycle in bankruptcies because of these problems. And they cannot hone in on the fact that the measurement protocol itself is a complete failure. So, in other words, I've said this many times before, if the bankers would adopt an approximate mathematics, then we could move forward in equilibrium, banking equilibrium, and then we wouldn't have a bankruptcy. See, but that's why we're stuck with Uniform Commercial Code not being told in the courtrooms, because they don't want people to go to reference books and to find out that we are in a state of bankruptcy at large. Okay, we know it infrastructurally. We know it behind the scenes, but it's not in the public media. So that means that when you read the public media, that works like a domino effect, that other things are hidden too. The hidden agendas are based upon the whole contrivancy that the legal system is hidden on its own. So that furthers the matters of media being a bunch of hype and not being relevant, or just it just isn't relevant. It's ridiculous. So we've got a huge facade, and then they create movies about Matrix and all that, and they're wondering what's really going on, and then they do conspiracy theories and all this stuff and contrive all sorts of nonsense that is booger monsters. They don't exist. They're ridiculous. I mean, there's a lot of terms you can for it. Fantasies, complete ridiculousness, but there is some reality in terms of the facts in the matter, in terms of the law, or like we talked at length this morning about exemption accounts and what have you. There's some real money that people are due in terms of fees, but getting it is another story, all right? Just like this whole idea of solvency, to get it implemented is another story of whether it can happen or not. I just don't know. But the idea of having the knowledge that we do have a fix, that a legitimate one too, in my opinion, and an easy one also, is very relevant in terms of the knowledge package, or to unveil the problems of like a dark age. I think from the time when from 1910 or Geneva Convention, I should say, in 1930 until 2004, we were in a dark age because they didn't know how to fix the bankruptcy, and they never should have done it in the first place. But at that time, they didn't have a conclusion on denouement, they say en français. And denouement is adapted in English, but it means a decent conclusion, or a potus, more prone to the Latin protocol, but a potus, protus and a potus sound so similar that you get those things mixed up. Protus would be first premise. A potus is a conclusion in Greek, but it's adapted for English. That's why when I was telling you the other day about trustor, trustee, why they went to creator and trustee, because trustor and trustee can be easily mixed up in terms of the oral dissertation. So that's why sometimes when you're using certain terms, like I use the word provenance, and a lot of people think I'm saying providence, mean referring to God per se, and I'm saying provenance, which means the source information. But then they say, well, the source could be God, and I'm saying, well, I don't really mean it that way. So it's just in terms of my lingo and the way I present things, sometimes people get that misconstrued. But that's good. The questioning is very important. Questioning the language or questioning things you don't understand is part of the bane of my existence when people don't do that. They just scan over things and don't pay attention, whereas I do that all the time, to the point of enhancement, basically, to try to self-aggrandizement, or to continue on and to make things pertinent in my life, and I think people should do that. But so back to the idea that we're in this bankruptcy and we'll probably remain there, but then because of that, and I was talking to, again, the UK faction this morning, I do a Sunday call that everybody that's on this call can be invited to. It's a two-hour political session that we go through some very thorough information in reference to a vast range of information and social information in a political realm per se. And like I said, I'm a disestablishmentarianist, so I don't cross the idea of the New Age ideas of karma and reincarnation. I don't put that in terms of the politics. So you can understand that I stay in that more governmental type regime in reference to the discussions, or or attempt to. We do fringes of things, but again, you can't go hell-bent for election, so to speak, in terms of crossing those two. In other words, I don't believe in establishmentarianism, combining, as they say, church and state. I don't believe in that. I don't think it works. It's a complete failure. It always has been in history, to the point that I think that whole Anne Boleyn thing, we were talking about that this morning a bit, about Henry VIII and their split from the church, was really just a excuse using his wife to be excommunicated. But in reality, he was trying to take control. The king should be in the political leader and the spiritual leader, but that is a complete failure. It doesn't work. So that's why the idea of disestablishmentarianism, I think I'm in favor of that, okay? Albeit it appears to be a negative term, but so be it. There it is in reference to it. And therefore, when we're talking about the issues of the planks that I've proposed in my dissertation here of sovereignty, I put several years ago the first one as health, because if you don't have your health, what's the point of politics if you're dead? You know, the joke that I made about that. And then you have the Sescovede Trust that in 1666, they declared everybody dead. And in reality, it was just a misinterpretation of non-sovereignty, that you're politically dead if you're non-sovereign because you're not certified to use the licenses issued by the government. See what I mean? So you're creating civil torts because you're really a non-existent sovereign. So they misconstrue all these things. And so what they did back in the post-plague eras, I mean, there were some problems in terms of filth, really. I mean, the whole bubonic plague, that term of itself was just the bubos, like swellings on the hands, really gross swellings. It was caused from just filth. And because I'm not into bacteriology and all that negative bacteria, but dirt, I mean, their plumbing and aqueducts were very poorly constructed, the ones they did have, and it was just really an awful time, you know, sewage and mud and just really gross. Right. And so what happened was when the hierarchy started cleaning up their act and inventing soap and washing themselves, it trickled down to the commoners, and they started cleaning up their act at that time, and it all went away, you see. So, but there was a lot of people that perished in that time, and therefore what the church did and the government in concert declared the people dead in the Sescovede Trust of 1666. And that's a protocol that they have in all the court systems that they don't reveal to you. So lately online they've been coming up with revealing it. And I'm saying, no, you just need to not do that. Because even when I'm explaining it, it is somewhat of a complex scenario. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to get into this dazzlingly brilliant intellectual thing. Because in that process you lose your audience completely. Albeit they'll think, oh, Grantham's such a genius, right? That's not my motive here. My motive is to make it simplified enough so that people can comprehend that the UCC is in the courtroom. There's no reason to deal with that trust. It's an inferior trust. They use it, but you can trump it right away with three letters, UCC, Uniform Commercial Code, and you can keep it that simple. I mean, we've had people in the past that have just said those three letters. There was an older man in Texas that did it. He just quoted UCC1, and one lady in Seattle, he just quoted the letter UCC, and they had their case dismissed. It's just, so it can be that simple. But people don't believe it. See, they try to go in there and get in the same jargon and get into a firefight in the courtroom in the language of the court, and what they do is they get it all twisted up in an inextricable mess. And then what happens is they find themselves declared incompetent sometimes. In Latin, it's non compos mentis, and mentally incompetent, because they don't know how to wield the jargon. And you don't have to. You go into a technicality with UCC. It trumps that Sescovede Trust that I've been saying the past couple of weeks. And because if you cancel the trust anyway by knowing that the judge is the trustor, the prosecutor is a trustee, you're the beneficiary, and all those different entrustions in the trust, just so you know that I know what I'm talking about in terms of Sesquicade. People say, well, I just brush over everything. I don't. I mean, I know these things inside and out. The point is, it's unnecessary. See, because if you're going to cancel the trust by becoming aware of it and saying, well, since I'm not those in those positions and the judge is all three of those Antrustians, and therefore you can cancel it and you can declare a cancelization of the trust, what's left in the courtroom? I said that this morning. What's left? Well, what's left is the Uniform Commercial Code. So why bother with all that by going in with it in the first place? You see what I mean? Like if you have a Maserati, hit the gas, you see? Why drive 25 miles an hour if you have one of the fastest cars in the world? Actually, a Bugatti is faster. It goes 300. Anyway, so but why would you, like I see people driving their BMWs and they drive slower than everybody else. They have all this real powerful machine and they don't use the thing. So it's ridiculous.
Well, they just buy
right?
the BMWs for status symbols. They're not concerned about, they're not really buying it for the speed or for, you know, mostly they're just buying it for status symbol.
Right, it's about like buying bestsellers and not reading them, right?
Right, putting them on your bookshelf.
Or in the Silicon Valley years ago, people used to buy the new software packages, and it got to be a shtick for a while where they would take pictures of CEOs at their desk, and in the back of their bookcases, they would have the software packages in shrink wrap. So it got to be a popular behavior to keep your new software in a shrink wrap and not even open it up, right? you buy it but never use it. Because if you use it, especially accounting packages, were in those days, accounting packages were such a mess, unbelievable mess. I mean, accounting is one of the most evanescent arts. It's worse than meteorology. Oh man, I'm telling you, in those days, gosh, the accounting packages were so dreadful. So it's best to keep them in the shrink wrap and don't bother, right? Oh my, it was such a joke, it really was. But the valley is, you know, because of the Cold War ending and whatnot. But getting into all that and regarding the, it wasn't really about computing; it was about war toys building the. For the economic demolition. That was what it was for. And then when the Cold War ended, everybody acted like, well, they're not really making weapons. Well, think about it. There's 17 agencies that NATO has, and they still are making weaponry because they have to make it for military exercises, and they do it for profit, government profit and what have you. We have a police state of standing armies. We don't have militias that go out like the Spartan 300 and protect our land and whatnot, and they do a better job of it. They hire the Hessians, you know. They have their hired military people. See, they don't. They're just hired mercenaries, basically. I mean, no one really cares. They just go through that to get paid. They're not defending their homeland or their homes and whatnot. There's not a visceral emotion in the whole thing. It's sort of a neutral, cold way of looking, a mirthless smile, if you will. In terms of the reality of that. See, so my opinion is we should have militia and forget about all the standing armies and police and all that. I mean, think about it when you go on the highways. They don't enforce anything. Who drives 55 on highways? Forget it. You know, they're driving 105, right? And then once in a while they pick people out. I mean, you talk to policemen. They let people go 10 miles over the speed limit unless they're darting in and out. They won't. And you need to dart in and out with all the people doing the what do I call it, the gapping, the big, huge gaps between in spaces and whatnot. I mean, it's ridiculous what's out there right now. So it's better to get a limousine, black out the window so you don't have to look at anything, and then just make sure you don't have the chauffeur Princess Di anyway, or somebody like it. It's a joke I can do now. It's been a long time, right? And I can see everyone's laughing, right?
Well, I don't know. It would be hard to tell.
But what I'm saying is there is so many ridiculous things these days. People don't mention anything. They just let everything go by. And that's important to address things because there needs to be some really solid change, if you will. Because the things I do on this show when I present these planks of the platform, political platform, really, is it's polishing up the system. I want to adamantly declare that this is not a parallel government or usurping what is in present in place. I'm just saying that there is a world order. I don't use the word new world order. There has been one since 1930, but it needs to be tweaked a little bit in terms of the sovereignty issue. I know people are, you know, they're talking about getting in trouble by declaring sovereignty, but there's a belligerence there to bully pulpit in terms of the common people. They shouldn't be that way. You have an attitude. If you're going in there in a normal attitude and working with and not against, as I say, my slogan is to work with. I know it's a prepositional phrase, ending the phrase with a preposition, but having said that, I've tried to look at it, but I think it's okay in terms of vernacular. But the point of it is we need to work together and not be a confrontational. Like, I try to go non-adversarial, not as a peacenik or passive position, quite the contrary, a powerful position, but one that is confident and working with the system that we have today. I'm not trying to usurp the system in any way, because it's totally unnecessary to do that. Why reinvent the wheel? It's ridiculous. And because you don't want to go up against a trillion, multi-trillion dollar lobby of NATO. It's ridiculous. I mean, there's people out there, that, especially American tribes, that want to go out as warriors like the Klingons in Star Trek. You know, it's a good day to die, as the Indians say. No, it's not really. You know, let's get real about these things. It's kind of a ridiculous thing. We're here alive. We should try to do our best to stay that way and communicate and make society such that it's workable. See, in my opinion, it's workable, but it's awkward right now because people are upset with all that's going on. So I think there is, when I'm doing these shows, there's some glue here, and there's some information that's important, and it's very important. And albeit you were saying earlier about there aren't that many people that listen, well, the ones that do listen are getting some good information. I think it's what holds things together in terms of a proper state of consciousness, if you will. I really think that what we bring up here is very pertinent, and it needs to be told and discussed even further. And I think that every single individual, they supposedly represent seven other people. So if one person gets it, you got multiples there. And then if you bring up the proper questions to enhance your knowledge about these things, it just furthers the cause, so to speak. And that cause is just the polishing up the present system with health, sovereignty, solvency, and afianchetto. And it's not that difficult. I've gone over it in my archive shows. There's probably 500 shows. We've been doing this show for about 10 years. So there's a lot of information that people can avail themselves of at their leisure. I mean, most of the last several hundred shows are half hour, so it's not a great lengthy dissertation. I know even 30 minutes out of people's workaday life, when I go to YouTube, I don't like to spend more than 10 minutes on things, so it's audacious for me to, I probably should do 15-minute shows and talk faster, right? Ari probably talks too fast for people. They have an international radio show called the America Today or something like that. And they speak very slow English. They say, "Hello, how are you? Today we will be interviewing our guest," who's a very special guest. So they speak very slowly. And so I was telling some people, if I spoke that way in America, they would consider me a dumb guy. That's pretty good, right?
Yes, that's very good.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your two-word answer. You know, at least it's not just one-word answer, right?
Well, that's true.
My guest host is very helpful in terms of giving abundant feedback. Most of the time, you're really good, but remember I used to pick on you years ago with that because of the... She would do interviews with people years ago, and she was always concerned with one-word answers, and she's trying to get people to elaborate on the answers, right, for interviews, correct?
Yes, that's true. But then I was a journalist. That was an issue because there were a few people, mostly for powerhead types who didn't really leave their computers and weren't very good at communicating with actual live people.
Yeah, well, they get into computer programming. They start speaking like a computer. We have a computer voice, you know, that type of thing. You're like, wait a minute, you know, I'm out of here, right? We need a little human emotion in there, you know, a little humanity, a little sentience, I'll say, instead of robotic computers and what have you. I mean, it really, during the day, we hear all these robot voices and what have you. it's really awful. I have a science fiction books that people can get, one of the free ones, but anyway, that's a different website. But I won't go into that. I apologize for keeping people in suspense. But in there, I was talking about how they had Golden Age Beginning Day, and I copped out too, but just like Isaac Asimov, really never explained positronic brains. You know, it was a poetic concept by a doctor in one of his books, right? And I always was picking on people in Silicon Valley talking about positronics. I said, no, that was a myth. You know, it was Isaac Asimov's myth, you know. So what did I do in my science fiction books? I copped out, too, because I didn't explain how the computers became sentient. But all of a sudden they did on Golden Age Beginning Day, they were sentient, right? So maybe in further books, if I wrote 10 books, that they're not published. They're very interesting. It's an interesting. You've read some of them, so I know you appreciate it. And at the same time,
I do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good. It's got better technology as well as statics. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'd love to see you publish them someday because it's interesting, the whole series.
Well, it has. What's the guy? Dougie Adams from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He died a few years ago, which is really sad. He was a young man, and he had mentioned relostatics in Hitchhiker's Guide, but didn't elaborate on it. It would be more like Tesla technology back in the early 20th century. But I really on this particular show, I don't necessarily need to get involved with that. Of course, I can do what I want, right? It's my show.
That's true. You are correct there.
I know. Well, it's good to be in control, right? So if anybody wants to get their own show, you can go online with Blog Talk Radio and get your own show. And years ago, I was doing some television, and they had on cable, and there was a gentleman that he got on a stool, and for an hour, he sat on the stool and then just fell off the stool and laid on the ground for an hour, right? He had a lot to say, I suppose, right? I don't know, maybe he passed out or something. I'm not sure. It's like those gurus in the East, they stop talking and start writing things down. They consider the speaking apparatus repulsive or something, or tanking the spiritual life or whatever. I'm wondering, oh my, it's so ridiculous, isn't it? When you get to a level where I don't want to speak any longer, I'm just going to write it down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully your grammar is very good in your own language. Oh my, so we're getting down to, thank goodness we're getting down to the last couple of minutes, right?
It went by pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think it did. I think we did some good work today. It was somewhat editorial, but at the same time, it's pertinent because we need to study, we need to do our level best out there and work together. We really need to facilitate more, and I think there's not enough of that. We need to outflow and work in coordination, working concerted. I use that term a lot because it's a nice term. It's musical, but it's a harmony. We need to work in harmony, and I really believe that. I think in people's heart of hearts, they believe that too, and we need to work on that on a daily basis. You know, like I said, outflow and bring more joy and happiness into our lives. We can do that. We really can. Just keep at it and just keep. I know that, especially in America, people are very introverted and very fearful, but we need to open up with that. You know, we need to look around a little more and stop playing the shield game and all that silliness. So thank you, Gabriella, for being on the show this week. I really appreciate your participation.
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity, Grant. I appreciate it as well, even though I'm here as a shill.
But you're paid well, right?
What?
All right, let me go because I got only a few seconds here. I'm Grant Taylor Hughes. Thank you for being on the show. Have a great week, and goodbye for now.